The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to today's webinar, Telecommunicator Mental Wellness, Silent No More, sponsored by Eventide Communications. Before we get started, there are just a few housekeeping notes to go over. This webinar is being recorded and will be made available online. You have joined in listen-only mode. This helps avoid background noise throughout the webinar. We want this to be as interactive as possible, so please feel free to ask your questions at any time throughout the webinar. The team will answer them at the end of the presentation. If you would like to ask a question, please use the question box in the control panel located on the right side of your screen. We will try to get to as many questions as possible. With that, I'm excited to introduce our speakers. Monica Million is CEO of Million Consulting Services and a veteran in emergency communications with over 25 years of industry experience. Her career began as a 911 telecommunicator and evolved into executive roles, including the first civilian deputy chief of services at a municipal police department and executive director of the Colorado 911 Resource Center. Million was the 911 subject matter expert for the Amazon Web Services Justice and Public Safety team. Alyssa Eichholz has been a 911 dispatcher for 8 years and currently serves as a second shift assistant supervisor and public information officer at the Hancock County 911 Center in Indiana. Beyond the communications center, she is the vice president of marketing for Positive 911, where she helps lead creative initiatives that uplift and advocate for telecommunicator recognition. Jim Marshall is Director Emeritus of the 911 Training Institute and currently owner of Jim Marshall LLC. He has served as a mental health professional for over 35 years, treating trauma and marital issues, later fully focusing on educating, advocating, and creating solutions to optimize the well-being and crisis call mastery of 911 professionals. Robin Moore plays a key role in shaping Eventide Communications' Critical Insights AI platform, helping emergency communication centers gain practical insights through advanced analytics and quality assurance. With a background in social emotional learning and resilience training, she brings a people-first perspective to technology, ensuring innovation supports the wellness and growth of 911 professionals. Now I'm going to turn it over to Robin.
All right, thank you, Lisa and Echo, and thank you to all of you for being here today. We all know that this work is so meaningful, and it's also tough, not just in the moment of a difficult call, but the way that that can linger over time. Behind every person is a headset, behind every headset is a person carrying both the responsibility and the impact of what they hear shift after shift. I know that many of you on the call today, some 975 of you that have registered for this live that reality every day. The panel that we've brought together here today is really going to make space for those experiences. And I expect today to hear from them, to name those challenges out loud, share their own stories, talk about what has helped, and really shine a light on the hope that is out there for improvement. I'm so grateful to be joined by some of the very best humans I've had the opportunity to get to know over the past year. And I know they're going to bring both honesty and real solutions to the table during our discussion today. I think their stories are going to allow for an amazing connection point. So with that, let's jump on in. I'm going to start with this question. You all have made the time to be here today. Why is it important for you all to be a part of the conversation? And Monica, I'll ask you to kick us off there.
Yeah, thank you, Robin. Super happy to participate in the conversation. First of all, this topic has been very important to me, top of mind for over the last 15 years, partly because of my own journey and supervising employees in this space for several years and watching their mental health journey through systems that didn't support them and how we failed them at their time of crisis and their time of need. And to me, that can no longer be tolerated in the profession. And based on my own personal challenges and growth, I continue to advocate for mental health in this space.
Thanks, Monica. Alyssa, why is it important to you to be part of this conversation? And then Jim, we'll hear from you.
So I also want to say that I'm just very grateful to be here today and very happy to be a part of this conversation. I do think when I entered the profession 8 years ago that the conversation was still just to kind of tough it out. And I really am appreciative of the shift and now talking about mental health, talking about the mental resources that are available, the peer support, and to create those healthier work environments. I'm just very passionate about kind of shifting the narrative and talking about mental health and saying that it is okay for all of us to make this conversation something more fluid and dynamic, that we're able to kind of change and help shift that stigma.
Awesome. And Jim, why make time for this conversation? Why is it important for you?
Well, first, I'm going to just begin by saying to Alyssa, you know, we talk about Next Gen 911, and we've been talking about it since like 2010 or something. Monica, you'll remember back to those days. But, you know, we need to recognize Next Gen 911 embodied by you, Alyssa, and your peers. Mm-hmm. And this conversation is critical to bringing us to a place with the next generation of 911 professionals, such that it's a profession they would want to come to and stay in and not run like the wind away from it. And so what is required is for us to be able to think strategically, systematically, bringing together 911 expertise, psych expertise, you know, psychophysiological awareness, and do what we can do, not recreating wheels and, you know, cookie cutter solutions or things that are obvious, but to be able to go strategically together to the next level of investment. And that's why I'm stoked to be here with everybody today, is to help advance that agenda.
It's been a ball getting ready for our call today because we've had a lot of really wonderful conversations. So Jim, I think you can help us by really framing our conversation today. You have helped dispatchers throughout your career with trauma and you know, a variety of challenges around relationships, mental wellness, and you've studied trauma and its impact in the emergency communications space for the past several decades. Can you help us define the challenges that the community is facing today, just based on your experience working directly with the community?
Yeah, I think I'm going to put a spin on this right in the moment here, because what I could do is cite statistics from great work and research that's been done. And I did a full bibliography, and I'll say that accompanying this webinar is an article that we just released on the Eventide resource page, and it's called Body, Mind, and Soul, A Look at 911 Wellbeing in the United States. And there we take a bit of a deeper dive. The numbers do matter to the extent that they point to the humans in the seat with the headsets on, and to their supervisors, and to our QA people who are listening to these calls over and over again, and now past the call, can't do anything about it, and to our directors. And so I want to frame the challenge, not in a way that may have already looked at it as. I want to suggest this. The challenge is fundamentally that we have human beings who will never be replaced fully by AI, who need to be reckoned with as the human infrastructure of the emergency response system in this country and throughout the world, whether it's 999, 112, or 911. What that means is we have an inherent both resilience, capacity, and risk, and that has to now be faced in a way based on what we now understand fully, not only about the problem, but today to be able to talk about solutions that are at the next level. I'm excited that we've come so far in this situation. So today we're not going to spend a bunch of time telling war stories, though those are important. People's own narratives about trauma are extremely important for healing, for encouraging those who have not yet found their words to speak what they need to speak. And when we think about the subtitle of this webinar, it's Silent No More. Now, when I first saw that proposed title, I pushed back because dispatchers are loud. They want to speak up. They're assertive. Like my sister, Debbie, the dispatcher, I mean, she's got opinions and you need to listen to them because she's smart. 911's wicked smart. But to back up on this, Silent No More, yes, does apply to those who are still privately carrying not only trauma, but the collective cumulative stress as burnout And part of the problem, what we see here is that how does it happen that in the 1970s, we'd already talked about burnout. It was happening in education among teachers, it was happening along, et cetera. But it's 2025, and this rises to the top of concerns in polls among our first response leaders in 911. Burnout is the issue. How did that happen? Well, it's because we haven't known enough about how to stop, prevent, and get ahead of the cumulative stress. So that's what we need to look at. Yes, I can toss out a couple numbers here, and I will, but it'll take about 30 seconds. And I don't want to be trivial about this. They are very important numbers to put this in perspective. But remember, they only matter as we converge on solutions based on what we know about the problem. So what do we have? Well, we have a rate of post-traumatic stress disorder, most probably between 17 and 24% in 911. This is according to Michelle Lilly's study. A study we did later with Michelle, with Dr. Lilly, suggested that it could be as high as 30% among our 911 professionals in the United States.
Wow, that's really striking.
Yeah,
really striking.
It is. And so here's the thing, it doesn't have to be that way. Those are not predicting the future. Those are looking backwards at where we've been. Okay, so depression at a rate of about 28%. Now, these numbers are international for 911 or in 999112. That's cumulative. Having said that, US has the highest numbers in terms of rates of depression and PTSD of any of our responders worldwide based on the study I'm citing, and you'll see the bibliography. Anxiety is really huge. You know, that idea of being jacked up. Well, if you imagine hypervigilance being an almost always experience, either expecting it at the console or when you're in the middle of calls. And then we move to hazardous drinking as a pattern that is not recognized fully. And when 911, they'll be the first to say there's anxiety eating, there's comfort eating, there's boredom eating. So we move now into the issue, right, of risk of metabolic syndrome and diseases related to all these things combined. Now, this is not to start us off on a down note. You know, 911 and our leaders, they're like, give it to us straight. Okay, so there it is straight. Now we move from the problem to what else we can do, but after we hear from Rust.
Yeah, Monica, as you kind of were listening to Jim and that framing, both kind of what the numbers say to us about the past and our goal of really looking forward, you know, you were a director for many years. What resonates with you personally about what Jim has just framed for us?
The whole idea, you know, those of us that have been in the space for a while, we've read the research, we know, and our responses, unfortunately, to date have been reactive, right? We've clinically defined what's happening with our folks, but now we have to start being preemptive. I have conversations with directors and managers all over the country, and I'm like, on day one with your new hires, you have to start talking about the impacts of this job and the tools that you have available for them to build their resilience. Mm-hmm. You can't just talk about the problem. We're more than a problem. We are about being resilient and what are the tools that we have available in our community. I love Alyssa's company. I think we don't tell that part of the story enough. And that's another thing that resonates with me is that 911 has traditionally not been good at telling our own story. So we struggle in attracting new applicants and we struggle with keeping folks. But we need to start talking about all the fantastic work they do, right? We did purposely need to shine a spotlight on the mental health and wellness of our workforce. But now we need to start shifting that. We are getting tools in our tool belt for them to thrive in this career, thrive in the profession. So now how do we sprinkle the positive things that they're doing, because they do more positive stuff than the negative impacts. And really for me, from a leadership perspective, having had the opportunity to be in leadership roles in different phases of my career, it's important for me as that person to tell my own story so that people, if I'm vulnerable, they'll have the courage to be vulnerable. When Jim spoke to the alcohol, that was my problem. That was my go-to mechanism, drinking, to the point that it interfered with a lot of aspects of my life. And when I talk about that story in front of folks across the country, all I get is a lot of head nods. So while we also use eating as a crutch in this profession, we also use drinking and other substances. So bringing a light to the what we can do differently and how we can tool them up to give them the support systems they need to thrive in this career, because it's a fantastic, fantastic career.
Thanks, Monica. Alyssa, you are currently under the headset and a shift supervisor, and you are also a rising leader in the PSAP community. What resonates with you about the challenges and the opportunities for you personally and your coworkers?
Yeah, and I think Monica touched on it. So just to elaborate, I mean, coming into this career, you definitely do, and through the years I've been here, we talk about the struggles and we talk about the burnout and we talk about the statistics of how things are hard and the depression, and wow, that's kind of exhausting. Like, to be here 8 years in this profession, and that's what I'm hearing day in and day out. And the fact of the matter is, I love my job. I think we do incredible work. I love being able to help people in such a very like exceptional and very unique way. And I don't hear that conversation enough, in my opinion. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be talking about the depression and the burnout and those statistics. Those are still important. But I do think that we have a very unique opportunity here to shed a lot of very good positive light on the work that 911 dispatchers are doing. I think that with some of the younger people coming in, the way that they want to showcase the work that they're doing with their peers, with their coworkers on social media, like how wonderful of a tool do we have to really highlight what we do as a profession? And I think that, you know, it is up to some of the leaders in the industry, it's up to the directors and you know, the people in within the organization to start sharing their telecommunicators' stories.
And Alyssa, I know that you are really committed to telling that story. And in addition to your full-time job, that includes, you know, dispatching and leading, you have spent some time really creating a grassroots movement around positive recognition. Would you share a little bit with us about your organization and what it aims to do in partnership with folks across the community?
Absolutely. So Positive 911 is a company for 911 recognition, and it's exactly how it sounds. Our mission is to share the good in 911 because there is so much good in 911. And we have specialty pins, anything from caller in crisis and baby delivery, things that we have seen before. But it's about exemplifying that and showcasing that in a broader way. We're trying to help centers showcase those achievements from their telecommunicators, specifically on social media, just because that's kind of the way the news outlet is going, but also in more grassroots, print media, news media, things like that. But helping directors who maybe of centers that don't have public information officers like I am for mine, or maybe don't have those resources, providing them a toolkit of sorts to really be able to help share that story. And I think it's just a great way to help that one person who had a remarkable thing, to help them share it with so many other people. And again, on this topic of mental health, what a better way than to talk about mental health and talk about the good things that we can be doing to help with our mental health when it is a very, you know, a draining job in a lot of ways. But we can also flip that narrative to kind of show, hey, there's so much good here. Come join us. Come be a part of this because it's a wonderful job. And I think that sometimes we get lost in that by just focusing on the negative.
Yeah. And if I could jump in on that, Monica, were you going to say something? Mm-mm. Okay. Because look, I hope that there are some of our old schoolers, old timers in here, some of our veterans who are crusty and kind of got mandatoled into this webinar, because I want to speak to you. Because you've been in my classes over the last 20 years, you've been the people I've been most interested in. And I found that behind that crusty exterior, there was a human being who had just learned to adapt to get through the crap and be able to get home and be able to have a life. And here's the deal. That some of those crustoids, those crustaceans, 9-1 crustaceans, might have said to Alyssa, okay, rainbows and unicorns, right? I say, here we go. These young people think everything will go away by being like ridiculously positive. Let me suggest something. This thing that Positive 911 is trying to do, and Alyssa, that you're spearheading, along with some guy named Ty Wooten, who's that, right? Okay, check out his name, folks, if you don't know. This is so critically important because it follows cognitive science. I want you to bear with me for a minute. And this just occurred to me at the last minute before we went on to, Alyssa didn't know I was going to share this at all. But burnout, okay, in 911, major threat to the attitude, the mindsets collectively that tears down morale, and then retention is deeply affected. Well, when you look at burnout, that's a psychophysiological thing. It's not just a little attitude thing. It's the cumulative impact hormonally on psychophysiology, the brain and hypervigilance across time. Mentally, what happens, and check me out on this, and Alyssa, I want to see what you think when I finish this little blurb here, because it's so critically important for our people listening right now. Burnout is really exemplified by negative core cognitions and negative daily cognitions. A negative core cognition is, I'm no good, I'm not good enough, I'm not lovable. But negative cognitions of a daily sort are, this job sucks, these people are idiots, these callers are wasting my time, I'm sick and tired of being here, there's no time for my family, why am I doing this? When the input you take interpersonally from callers and field responders is fundamentally negative in nature, you take the high frequency of negativity across time, days, weeks, months, and years, and you have burnout. Now, what happens though when you infuse positive cognitions that are not sweet cookie cutter, but are really substantive, like you're doing, when somebody gets a pin that's designed for 911 that says, look, this is no joke. You helped save that woman from her fear that her husband was gonna die because you were right beside her on that call. This pin is for you. That's not just a token, it's symbolic of investment in our people. So when we, and what does that do? I matter, this work is significant. I think I can do this another day. Now we're turning the tide and we need to change the proportion from negative to positive predominantly. Okay, so it turns out that this kind of a movement, along with the other things I hope we can speak about today, which are also tremendous solutions, if you as our ECC leaders, everyone who's here today, if you weren't invested already in your people, you wouldn't have signed up and you wouldn't have shown up. You're here to win for the sake of your comm center. So you deserve this kind of help. And I just want to commend you, Alyssa and Ty for doing what you're doing. And what are your thoughts, anybody, about what I just said?
If I could share just a very short story, and it actually isn't about Positive 911 particularly, but in our center, we were revving up for a really big snowstorm. We've all been there. We know that it's coming. We know that we are going to get inundated with phone calls. We know that our screens are going to be paragraphs of calls put out and officers and fire departments to be on. But prior to us knowing that that storm was going to hit, I grabbed my phone and I took a picture of everyone who was in the comm center that day, threw it up on Facebook. And I said, you know, we're ready for this storm to hit, community. And we are here from you, we're under the headset, and like, stay safe tonight. And I know not every center has the opportunity to facilitate their own Facebook and things like that. We're lucky that we do. Now, when that storm hit, and we've, again, most of us here have been under this headset, it is exhausting. And to Jim's point, like, it is just little negative, like little problem after little problem, and you are just hearing it and hearing it and hearing it. And it is getting exhausting and it is wearing you down. And I would challenge any director to look out on their floor in the middle of those moments. And when there's a millisecond of downtime, what are people doing? They're checking their phones. Mm-hmm. And what my center was doing, yeah, they checked their phones and we were already on Facebook. And what was also getting flooded was comments on that post. You guys are amazing. You guys are so great. Keep up the good work. Thank you for keeping us safe. Thank you for everything that you do for our community. So in the middle of this snowstorm where we have just cars sliding off the roads and officers coming in for traffic, another wrecker and another wrecker, and fire departments call the power company and another power company. We had a moment here and there where I was able to pick up my phone and look at this community that was so supportive and giving us such positive feedback that guess what? I'm ready to answer that next call. And I'm ready to have a better attitude over the radio with my fire department and my police officers because I have substantial proof from people that are positively impacting the work that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And all that did was raise morale throughout our center that night when I have also been on the other end where those are just exhausting nights, period. And you don't have anything good to say, right? And that was just one small little thing. Now imagine that exemplified by something like, again, we're trying to do with pins and with broader and bigger recognition for substantial calls and things like that. But going beyond and really, like you said, changing that narrative, even in the smallest way, to help your 911 telecommunicators just see the good that they're doing is so impactful. It changed the entire attitude for everyone on shift that night.
Alyssa, I'm so struck by the power of that one small action.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it is really striking what kind of impact that can have. And I think I wanted to point our panel towards what solutions are out there. What tools do we have that are already in existence that we can highlight? You know, with the endorsement from our clinical expert on the call, with the endorsement of our seasoned leader on the call. And I'd love for us to go into that space because I think that's really why we're all here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, to Jim's point, the thing that got me excited more about this webinar, I think Alyssa said it also, we've been telling the story for a while. Well, now we need to be offering solutions. What are those solutions? And for me, because I've been involved so heavily in technology for the last several years, that's why I do the work I do with Eventide and the Critical Insights tool that has been developed. We allows us to be, as leaders, more preemptive in the care of our folks. And by that, I mean using artificial intelligence tools with keywords, with flags that say, hey, you know, I'm putting my supervisor hat on in the center, and Alyssa and Jim both can relate to this. They're wearing 30 hats. Can they pay attention to every single call that their employees are taking during the shift? They cannot. They cannot. They're being tasked with 20 other things. They're putting out fires from the chief, their director, whatever. And the most important person in that room is their staff. And they're being pulled away from that level of responsibility. But the tools that are built through artificial intelligence capabilities give them a leg up to say, oh, Monica just took a child dying. An active shooter call. In the last hour and a half, she took 5 critical calls. Red flag, you might want to go check on her. Wow. Instead of me being bogged down as a supervisor and all the tertiary tasks I've been challenged to do, I have this tool in front of me, this technology tool in front of me that's giving me the capability to say, oh, go check on her. Oh, maybe get her up, go take a break. Maybe we could do something like that. Some of us can't, but maybe we do positive influence like Alyssa's suggesting. Go over, man, you're doing a fantastic job. The reason those people got so excited on shift, and Jim can validate this, for looking at those Facebook posts, those happy moments were releasing a chemical called dopamine that makes you happy and counteracts all of the bad hormones that we're dumping in our system, like cortisol and other hormones that make us have negative impact on our emotion and our physical well-being. Mm-hmm. That positive message releases dopamine and it counteracts all that stuff. And that's why they started to feel happy. So if you can just take a few minutes as a supervisor in the room using these artificial intelligence tools like Critical Insights and go, oh, Monica, I want you to know I can't get you off the floor right now, but you're doing a fantastic job. I'll get you up and out as soon as I can. Go take a breath of fresh air, walk outside, whatever it is. But it gives you that moment to be preemptive. Up to this point, prior to the technology that exists today, all we've been able to do is be reactive in the care of our folks. And I'm hoarding the conversation. Apologize.
No, you're not. And I want to add this. So for those of you who are with us right now, if you imagine, you visualize, we zoomed in on two solutions here so far, and that was what Alyssa's offering through strategic, systematic affirmation. That's really what it is. It's not just a nice thing here and a nice thing here. No, it's how do you get strategic and systematic in your affirmation of people to change the biochemistry, to change the morale, one person at a time, collectively as a group. So then Monica brings in the solutions that we can activate with AI. I want to offer a thought about that, folks, and then I'd like us to zoom out, and I want to propose a big picture view of where to start or where to continue for all of you who are leaders in your centers, whether you've been designated because you volunteered to help lead your center, thanks to your director saying, please go for it, like lead us in the wellness area, or if you are the director, the manager, or you may even be on a board, a 911 governing board, please join with me. Part A is this. There's a rule number one about the rescue of tech in 911. In other words, tech can come to the rescue in 911 to an extent using AI. But here's the rule. There has to be a commitment to due diligence. And that means not rushing in to be the first to create tools that are half-baked. Now, I'm not speaking to anyone out there. I'm speaking to the principal. And this is why, and this is the first time I've ever presented, not on behalf of the 911 Training Institute, which is now in the very, I selected a man, Dr. Richard Jenk, who's now leading the 911 Training Institute. And I'm now in my preferment, which means I get to hyper-focus on just those things I'm most invested in. It's the first time I've partnered up with you know, a tech company in this way, and why have I done it? I don't need it, but I tell you why I'm doing it, and that is, all along through the history of 911, those of you who had been in 911 for a long time realize we couldn't have done Next Gen or SENET or any of those things without the partnership, FirstNet, we couldn't have done those partnerships without collaborating between the private sector and 911. It's not a conflict of interest, it's what must happen to get us where we need to go. But I want to offer this as the rule. For all those out there who are psyched about tech and about AI, let's be sure we always develop things with a combination of subject matter experts who are 911 pros, including those sitting at the console, those who have been there like Melissa and still lead, and mental health professionals, along with the tech people, so that what we develop is not a burden and one more thing that 911 at the front line or the supervisor, the directors are just feeling, oh great, like you're killing us with tools now. We've got to be thoughtful about how we build these in partnership. Having said that, that's why I feel like Eventide, what you're doing is right, because you're being careful. You're being thoughtful about how we proceed. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I guess what you're going to say, no.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Well, okay. And I, you know, to speak just a little bit to Eventide's work, we have been, you know, we've been in the space for more than 20 years and have always had the perspective of partnering with external expertise. And we continue that tradition, especially in the this time of kind of massive growth of tools in AI. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of our, you know, rationale for bringing this panel together today is, you know, we are really committed to ensuring that the tools that we develop do no harm and are tools that empower folks to be the best leaders, to create the positive culture that they want to see, and then to create the outcomes where folks are healthy and thriving on the job, that they are facing the real challenge of the job openly, in discussion with one another, accessing resources as they need it. And so, you know, I think, you know, we have gone slow ultimately to go fast at the end, right? Because it is so critically important to get it right.
Yes. And can I jump in, Robin?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, because then that's why I trust you guys. Now, let me just say this. I promised to come back to part two, and that was, what is the big picture for all of those who are participating with us today? I'm going to beg you, folks, I'm going to beg you to do something. Please find the article that is posted on the Eventide site, or search for it another way, but it's right there. It's the standard to protect the well-being of 911 professionals. For leaders, I've sat with so many directors privately and listened to them, and then we've been together at all the conferences, et cetera. And there's you're spinning so many plates, you have so many things you have to do. If it's gonna be radically elaborate and overwhelming to build out your plan to help protect the well-being of your people psychologically, physiologically, it may not get done. But we already have a very good start. We have more and more of the preponderance of peer support programs or access to peer support, right? There's more and more resilience training available to make sure that it's expertly designed and delivered. What I'm getting at though is every one of these things we're talking about, solutions, are important, but you have to see them in the whole. What are they a part of? And I want to propose they need to be part of a well thought out CSRP, Comprehensive Stress Resilience Plan. The NINA standard to protect the well-being of 911 professionals gives you all the guidance to build your CSRP. If you don't have a plan, you know, without a plan, the people perish, okay? Without a vision that's embodied in a plan. So what I want to urge you, step number one, folks, step number one is read the doggone standard. You don't have to read every bit of it, but read it when it talks about building your CSRP. Folks, if you don't have a comprehensive stress resilience plan for your center, you don't have to do all the work, directors. You can appoint people. Some of your folks will be on fire and love to do this. Like, look at Alyssa. She's a prime example of somebody stepping forward. But you need to be sure, are you checking your boxes? Do you have, and I'm going to get to this really critically important, do you have access to evidence-based treatment providers in your area who are culturally competent? In a little bit, when it's my turn again, whatever that is, I'm going to stay back and behave. But we want to talk about a huge initiative of APCO International in NINA that's just breaking through right now. NINA and APCO are coming together in a level that's in building on past presidents of both associations to say we need, while we're separate organizations, to work united to reach our members with the very best we can. And one of the elements of a CSRP you have to have is access to evidence-based treatment providers who get 911. Because if you think you're sending folks out there with a number or you got an EAP, many of which are very flawed and not designed for 911, we need to change that. You need to demand that that is changing your agency the best you can, even if you're not the one that selected them. But think again, if we only give folks a number and we have not vetted these people in some way, they end up discouraging quitting, not going to treatment. So CSRP, and I'll wait my turn to talk about this new initiative that's is breaking out right now regarding evidence-based treatment.
And if I could add something to that as well, someone who's still working a console under the headset, and I think Monica and I have had this conversation, all of the vetting and having those programs in place, yes, those are important. What I think is equally as important though, is for our people, our leaders in those centers to express to their employees that, hey, I've been in your shoes and I've used this program, or I have had a hardship and I have done this work to come for the solution. Like, this is the solution, right? We can put it on paper all day. I can talk, oh, we've got it. We've got this program. Go use it. But I don't want to feel alone. I don't want to be the one, as the dispatcher. I'm not the one with the problem, remember? That's what we've said for years and years is, you know, I'm tough. They didn't have to do it. I'm not gonna be the one that goes to EAP. No. Directors, go to the EAP, talk with those resources that you're providing to people, and then tell your people that you've used them. Yeah. You know, that's the only way they're going to go.
Right. You have to be the model. You have to lead the way.
Monica, I've been thinking about you because I think you have lived this path and with great vulnerability. And I wonder if you could share a little bit about how you opened up that space in your center as a leader. What were the things that you did? What was because you face some great challenges and you face them head on. And I think it would be helpful, I think it's always helpful to have a model and to hear a story about how somebody did it, because it helps us envision how we might do it ourselves.
Yeah, it's so easy to sit back and say, I got to help everybody else and not recognize. And I don't know that I've ever properly thanked Jim. He was with me on a good part of that journey. And I would get a call from him, hey, how you doing? And you have to, so to your question, Robin, here's what I did. I went and subjected myself to the very same thing I was challenging my people to do. I went and saw the counselor. I went and talked to him. I talked to the subject matter experts. What do I need to do? Past that, I went to additional counseling past the subject matter expert we had access to at our agency. And then I began to share my story and talk about how the crutches I was using were interfering in my life and making me less than what I needed to be the best leader I could be for my organization and for my people. And Alyssa's absolutely right. If you're not willing to share your story, don't think your people are going to step up and tell their story. I was dealing with my husband's terminal illness, the pressure at work and all of that, and helping my folks. And I had never dealt with my own baggage, and it just compounded into a disaster waiting to happen. And my drinking increased. It was not good. But to Alyssa's point and to your question, Robin, I had to share that I was very much willing to participate in those programs. Yeah. And if you're not willing to do that, you can't expect your people to be willing to do it either, to take advantage of the resources.
Well, I'm going to wait, Robin. Go ahead.
I'm just looking through the chat and taking a look at what some of our audience members are asking. One, they're asking for the resource that you mentioned, the standard, Jim. And towards the end of our webinar today, I will share a QR code. We'll put that up on the screen and you can use your phone. And that'll take you to the link to the resources that Jim was talking about on the Eventide website. And that standard is one of several resources there.
Yes.
A question from one of the audience members regarding EAP. Do you think that EAP would be the best to assist telecommunicators? When telecommunicators speak with their doctors, they are directed to see therapists, and the stigma along with that may have the telecommunicator looked at as incompetent and or unemployable. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Can I address that first?
Sure.
You know, you have to think about this was 2012, so 13 years ago. You know, many of our municipal and county organizations have access to EAP programs, but to Jim's point, they are not practice clinicians in the public safety space. I had to work
and I had to work
with our human resources department to say and speak to the challenges of dealing with people from the public safety culture. How do these clinicians, how are what they're saying and the solutions they're offering valid to us? How do they not invalidate the very people who are coming to them with their challenges? And I had to work with an organization called Nicoletti and Associates. They're a predominant organization here in the state of Colorado. And I got permission to use their counselors exclusively outside of our EAP, but I had to do the legwork. I had to prove to our human resource division that the EAP counselors, and you have to remember where I'm at is a rural suburban community, not urban. Subject matter experts are few and far between, so we had to pay extra to fly their experts from the Denver metro area to Western Colorado. But because I was able to produce the data and statistics and information, I got the support of the chief of police because they needed the same subject matter expertise as our 911 telecommunicators did. I was able to get human resources to cooperate with us and add them as the special counseling work, the EAP benefit for the public safety team. It took a lot of work on my part, but the director or manager has to do that legwork, because in many parts of our country, those subject matter experts are not in our communities.
Right. And I want to tag on that, Robin, if I can. This is really important. Yes, so we have time for the questions as well. To the question that one of our participants asked about the EAP, Monica has spoken. This is right on. You or your deputy director have to champion going to HR and making sure that your EAP is clean. There are resources here. I've written about how you evaluate an EAP, what this best practice standard should be. You'll find that resource there in the list. But let me just say this. Let's go to the bigger picture here. EAPs are designed not to handle serious, severe problems with major depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, severe mental problems, et cetera. They're there for adjustment kinds of situations. Maybe I'm trying to figure out how to manage the stress of my job. Maybe I'm having some conflict with a coworker, maybe somebody at home. So they're there as a wonderful resource that way most of the time. Now, part B in this, and everybody, I hope that you'll really dial in with me on this, is that we have to have clinicians in your community who are identified as being culturally competent with 911 pros. What does that mean? It means that when your people walk in, they don't end up having to school the clinician while the clinician cries and says, I could never do your job. That's too hard. You should quit your job. Now, let me say this. As a major initiative of NINA and APCO International, we've completed a 4-hour educational documentary, which is going to be released probably by the end of October for clinicians in the US and internationally as they are English speaking. What we've done is created this course in partnership of APCO International, NINA, and the EMDR International Association. EMDR is one of the three evidence-based treatments along with a couple others. I was a member of this organization for many years, still am, and my point is this. What we did was to create this educational documentary so that, now this is critical, so that those who complete the course in the U.S. and elsewhere, but in the U.S., will end up with a designation that they are 911 prepared, meaning they have steeped themselves in that 4 hours and really learned from 911 professionals. We interviewed 12 different 911 professionals. They talked all about everything in terms of life in the comm center, what it's like to have this job. I weigh in as a clinical person on this. If clinicians will take that course, they then get that designation. So now here's the bottom line. Our people are not searching out in the ether land trying to find a clinician. They can go to the EMDR International site and they'll be right there, 911 prepared clinicians. They can click on them, find them in their area, if we can get enough of them in the United States to take the course. So locally, leaders, check this out. There's more information about it. I've given you the link to a 20-minute trailer and introduction to the 4-hour documentary, which you can review yourself. That's in the resource page, all right, and then you can go from there. But this is critically important: be ready to be able to find people, for them to be there for our people to find and seek help from.
Great. Another question coming from the audience. This comes from Megan, and she writes: if I wanted to start a mental wellness program at my center, how could I approach my admin with the idea, and then some startup ideas? So we'd love to hear, first, taking Jim's advice and reading that standard is a great place to start. And then what are the first steps we would advise to Megan? Sounds like we've got some grassroots energy here. Sounds like this is a space where there is not currently a wellness program. So what would your advice be to Megan? And I'd love to hear from all three of you as in your perspective.
And if you, Alyssa, if you don't mind, and Jim, if you don't mind, I'll take it first. Putting my director hat on, you have to do the research. And the research pretty much has already been done for us today. Back in 2010, 11, and 12, there was no research like this. The statistics were not available to us. So the statistics are already produced by subject matter experts. You take that information and you speak to how is mental health affecting my center. Here's how it's affecting the industry. So we've given you those numbers. Paint the picture for your leadership. What's your attendance problems like? Do you have attendance problem? What are your morale issues? How is it affecting your day-to-day operations? But I want you to think about a mental wellness program to include all the things that Alyssa is advocating for, because it's a holistic approach. You have to have the reactive, the things, required resilience training annually for your team. What does that look like? There are already standards in place that say that from both APCO and NENA that provide that groundwork so that you have critical incident stress management teams on your workforce. And then the whole positivity, the science behind that, and adding that layer into your holistic approach and plan. It's no longer just about good nutrition and getting your sleep. There's all kinds of things, and there's a ton of tools out there. But you got to start out. Here's what the industry picture is. Here's what our internal agency picture is. And here are the things industry is telling us is a best standard practice for us to implement. The standards are already out there. So you could take that information and formulate it into your document. Right. Alyssa, I don't know what you want to add on to that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm, again, lucky that we do kind of already have that in the centers that I've worked in, and I haven't had to start one up. But when it goes, you mentioned, Megan, how do I like convince admin almost that this is necessary? And I think with Monica and Jim here, they're laying out the framework of there's research. Like for that not to exist is something that like the research just doesn't back in this industry. But from my perspective of, yeah, wellness being thought of as something that, though we do need to think of how this job is difficult and is hard, but wellness also being, how can we explore ways to boost morale and positivity in our center, and thinking of wellness, like Monica said, yes, holistically, but it's so much more than just, like she said, sleep and nutrition. And she mentioned the word affirmations, and I think that that's really important. At the very like baseline, if you don't have maybe the money or the resources to buy pins, or if your admin doesn't allow you on social media, but what are some ways of positive affirmations that you can explore in your center? And that could be, you know, little note cards to your people and things like that, but exploring the positive, the good things that your people are doing as a form of wellness, I think is important.
Great. How about you, Jim, advice to Megan as she looks at pitching to her leadership?
Yeah. Download the standard to protect the well-being 911 professionals. Just don't reinvent the wheel. Don't start all over. Read what it says about how to build a comprehensive stress resilience plan and read that information. The other thing is, to everybody, watch the trailer or the introduction to the EMDR clinician cultural competence course so that you can champion that locally. You could take that to your leader as part of your initiative and say, will you please watch this 20-minute trailer with me? And then going to clinicians locally saying, you need to be ready to serve us.
Mm-hmm. And engage your chiefs. They have this, their problem is identical to ours. The same subject matter expertise does not exist for them. It does not exist for us. So they will help you advocate.
Great. Another question from our audience. You mentioned preemptive strategies that leadership can take by giving their PSTs tools to build resilience. This person is wondering what tools you would recommend and what could each person do to create boundaries to guard against the burnout, depression, anxiety, et cetera.
Can I jump in on that? I'm going to suggest, because you know we're over partisanship and all that stuff. Go to the 911 Training Institute, to the resources section. We have a ton of resources that are listed there, some of which were developed and are accessible on NENA site, possibly APCO site. But go to 911 Training Institute under resources and just find them. So for example, preemptively, the post-tragedy care checklist. Prevention is primary and secondary. When crap happens, you have a planned school attack. How do we prevent the fallout that ends up being part of burnout, depression, PTSD? By having plans in place for how to come alongside your people in real time. That's prevention. We have a post-tragedy care checklist, which is guides a leader and their people on every step in that hour, that day, that week, that month, and for the next 2 years, how you come behind major events. There are tools like that that are very nitty gritty available, just go to 911training.net. That's just one of many. And then go to Nina's. Monica, what about Nina's?
Well, yeah, the Nina Wellness Continuum. You don't even have to be a member. It's right available on the www.nina.org on the facing page, the Wellness Continuum. There are a ton of resources. Every aspect of wellness is on there, from positivity to nutrition, sleep habits, mindfulness, all the things. And those resources are vetted by a panel of people rigorously. They've been tried, true, and tested before they're even allowed to be on the list of resources.
Yeah, and I would just offer this, folks. Take a deep breath, because you could feel overwhelmed, not only the problem, but when you look at the solutions, it's like, where do we start? And that is why it's important to start with the standard and gather it all together in the CSRP, so that you have some sense of cohesion in doing this. Take a first step there.
Great advice. Well, with our kind of last few minutes, I do want to, with, you know, hold some time at the end so that way folks can get a hold of that QR code to visit some of the resources that we've mentioned today. I just would like to ask each of our panelists, for each of you, what is, you know, one thing that gives you hope in this space? One thing that, because, you know, as I've spoken with all three of you bring such energy and excitement and to the space, especially with what's happening right now. What is your kind of cause for hope? What is one thing that is kind of lighting you up inside that we can send folks out with?
I'll start. I think the fact that we are here today, that we had, what did we say, right under 1,000 people actively wanting to be a part of this conversation. How inspiring is that? Don't think that you're alone in wanting to change the culture of 911 in the conversation of mental health. Don't think that you're alone in wanting to start an initiative to change how the conversation on mental health is going, because there was 1,000 of us here today, and we have some amazing leaders, amazing private sector companies that are wanting this for 911. And I think in this job, it's so easy to feel, like Jim said, overwhelmed, but also very alone. Like, I want it to be good. So does that, so do so many people. So lean on that support. And I think that that's what definitely inspires me, is to see that there are so many of us that want to change this narrative.
Yeah. Just to piggyback on what Alyssa said, I think the thing that brings me the most hope is that finally we have a multifaceted solutions. Right. It's, you have to deploy more than one thing, and it has to be multifaceted. And today we've talked about technology, we've talked about clinical research and positive programs and positive affirmations. It takes all of those things to really start to shift the paradigm for us in this industry. And that's what I'm most hopeful about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my hope is fundamentally, and I don't know what space any one of you are in who are listening among the several hundred that are here today, but my hope is in this. Responders in 911, I know from a lot of one-on-ones, tend to be self-critical, very critical. Others might be surprised you're even more critical of yourself than you are of others if you tend to bend that way. But I'm gonna say this. I know 911, and we have a phenomenal group of human beings. There's so much intelligence, so much caring, so much investment amidst the burnout. And the hope is in knowing who we really are, knowing who you really are, better than you think and better than you sometimes treat yourself. And we'll avail ourselves of these tools and invest in ourselves as the priority. Look out. I mean, the next generation is going to be healthier and dynamite. So I'm excited to be a part of that.
Great, thank you so much. We are near the end of our panel, and I want to thank our panelists for being here. As promised, go ahead and grab your phone if you have it next to you and take a quick shot of this QR code that will send you to Eventide Communications wellness page, where we have many of the resources posted that we spoke on today. Thank you to all of you for being part of the conversation. We know that together we can build a healthier, more resilient 911 community because the people behind the calls matter just as much as the people that are making them. So thank you for joining us. And one last word from us. If you're curious about how you can harness data to impact health and well-being, we'd love to chat with you. We will be at the APCO AI Summit in Florida. If you're there, feel free to scan and book a demo with us. We'd love to chat with you. You're welcome to also contact us via our website or our loggers email, and we'd love to chat with you. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate your time. Thank you. Be well.